crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome to today's Watch Jerusalem program. I'm your host, Christopher Eames, and I'm coming to you again today from beautiful, wet Edstone, England. For today's program, we have what might ordinarily be considered a rather off-the-wall subject. We'll be looking at ancient Middle East astronomy, mathematical genius, and the patriarch Abraham. You'll see where this is going as the program continues. You'll see the unique connection between these three topics. Now, if you've got any questions or comments for our program or the Watch Jerusalem website in general, feel free to email us at letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. You can also write to us if you would like as well. All the information is available on the website watchjerusalem.co.il, so we'd certainly appreciate your contact. Now, did you ever wonder why God told the patriarch Abraham to take that journey of faith out of his original homeland in Babylonia? What if I told you that it was in relation to astronomy and advanced mathematics? Perhaps that sounds crazy at first, but archaeological discoveries and ancient texts have helped to shed light on the remarkable life of the patriarch Abraham before his sojourn into the Promised Land. And they also show one of the reasons why he had to leave Babylonia in the first place. But firstly, for this program, let's understand the environment within which the patriarch Abraham grew up as a Chaldean within ancient Babylonia. Now, scientists have only recently, really, over the past 100 years and even over the past several weeks, been coming to grips with the sheer mathematical genius of the ancient Babylonians. Here's an example. Some of you listeners may remember the Pythagorean theorem from those school math classes you took. The Greek mathematician Pythagoras, around the 500s BC, discovered this theorem, quote-unquote discovered it, for working out the hypotenuse of a right-angle triangle. You might need your dictionary for that one, if you're like me. Maths isn't exactly my strong subject, but ever since Pythagoras' name has been given to this method of finding out the hypotenuse of a triangle, a right-angle triangle. One thing, though, the Babylonians had already discovered this method over 1,200 years earlier. The discovery of a tablet, a mathematical tablet, dating to around 1800 BC, showed text fulfilling that triangular equation of Pythagoras's, a squared plus b squared equals c squared. That's incredible. Around the 17th century BC, 1,200 years earlier, the Babylonians had already worked this out. Now, the artifact on which this had been found also, found about 100 years ago, early 1900s, is known as Plimpton 322. A rather strange name for this tablet, and it has only been recently re-examined. You may have seen a few articles coming out over the past week or two talking about some of the amazing things that have been rediscovered from this tablet. And scientists have been stunned by the general knowledge of trigonometry on it. Like the Pythagorean theorem, trigonometry itself was typically attributed to the Greeks around 120 BC, so a little over 2,000 years ago. Yet here on this tablet, Plimpton 322, is evidence of a Babylonian document displaying understanding of trigonometry 1,700 years before that. Forget 2,000-year-old trigonometry. This is nearly 4,000-year-old trigonometry here. And what's more, the Babylonian methods of figuring out these trigonometric calculations are, to a certain extent, more advanced than today, the methods that we use today. The modern mathematician Dr. Daniel Mansfield stated, quote, "Our research shows that Plimpton 322 is a trigonometric table so unfamiliar and advanced that in some respects it's superior to modern trigonometry." One of the big reasons for that is today we typically use tenths, the measure of 10, 1 to 10, to divide things and for our calculations. So if you divide a number like 10 into 3, then you end up with 3.333 and you have a little left over. So it's not quite an accurate calculation, whereas the Babylonians used 60 as their base number rather than 10. And with a bigger number like 60, you can divide it by a decimal, by a tenth. You can divide it by 3. You just get a much more accurate number in the long run. So they were more adept, more apt at figuring out these equations. Of course, we can do the same today, but that's not the modern method. And so you can point out that the traditional Babylonian method of figuring out these mathematical calculations was much more advanced in some ways than it is today. And from that base of 60, we get our modern day measurements of our 360 degree circle. We get our 60 second minute. We get our 60 minute hour from the Babylonians, from that ancient knowledge there. So it's really interesting to see that coming through these really accurate tablets, through these calculations. And added to the triangular calculations, the Babylonians had at least a pretty good idea of the value of pi for figuring out the circumference of a circle. Theirs was 3.125. Now, today we know it to be a little over 3.14. So 3.125 versus 3.14. So pretty close, pretty good on them for getting that number there 4,000 years ago or so. And their genius went beyond complex mathematics, and it was also directed to astronomy. Now, some of the earliest known astronomy texts from Babylon describe observations of the planet Venus. The Babylonians also could work out and predict when eclipses would occur hundreds of years in advance. And an interesting point about this is they believed eclipses to be associated with bad omens. So if they knew an eclipse was coming, they would have a substitute king that would take over the throne so the main king wouldn't have to rule through an eclipse. And then unfortunately for that substitute king, he would then be killed after his short reign, after the bad omen of the eclipse. So really their eclipse of a bad omen was a self-fulfilling prophecy there for the poor subservient king who took over during that time. But they were able to predict eclipses hundreds of years in advance. They were also able to predict where certain planets could be found in the sky at any point in the future. The Greek philosopher Callisthenes from the 4th century BC acquired a series of Babylonian astronomy documents covering running observations from throughout the past 2,000 years. So this is a philosopher about 2,300 years ago. And at that point, he was able to procure a set of documents documenting the prior 2,000 years of astronomy of knowledge and observations. And much later on, around the 5th century BC, a Babylonian tablet was found showing a trapezoid procedure of calculating the path of the planet Jupiter. Now, this method thought to have been discovered 1,400 years later, actually displayed one of the foundational principles of calculus. So you see a lot of mathematical, astronomical, astronomy-focused, precise calculations being discovered, being used by the Babylonians. And this was all surrounding the world within which Abraham the patriarch was growing up. and of course a little later than his time period as well. But he was right in the thick of it, right in the thick of this Babylonian discovery of these advancements in the Babylonian culture. Now, Genesis in the Bible states that Abraham was originally from Ur, a Chaldean city. The Chaldeans were known as a Babylonian tribe, and not just a tribe in their own right, but also an especially gifted scientific class of people. So Abraham really was in the thick of the real wisdom and the driving force of this scientific advancement here in ancient Babylon. But not only was he exposed to Chaldean Babylonian astronomy and mathematics, ancient historians also record that he was a leading light in these fields. Abraham himself was a leading light in these scientific fields. The 3rd century BC Chaldean historian Berosus stated that, quote, "In the 10th generation after the flood, there was among the Chaldeans a man righteous and great and skillful in the celestial science," end of quote. Now, while Berosus did not name who this man was, who this righteous and great, skillful in the celestial science man was, Josephus quotes Berosus and states that he was referring to Abraham, the patriarch Abraham. And further, Josephus points to the 6th century Greek historian Hecataeus, saying that this historian, Hecataeus, not only mentioned Abraham by name and his great exploits, but wrote an entire book on the patriarch Abraham. An entire book was composed by Hecataeus on Abraham. Unfortunately, today we only have 2 fragmentary works from Hecataeus that survive. You find that a lot throughout history. The amount of knowledge that has been lost from these ancient peoples is really quite sad, and really we are only just rediscovering a lot of the knowledge that was already known way back in the past. That certainly is the case with these Babylonian astronomy and mathematical discoveries that have been made. We're only rediscovering knowledge that the ancients once had. And unfortunately, this book about Abraham by Hecataeus is no longer with us. The 1st century BC historian Nicolaus of Damascus also wrote of Abraham's prominence before his sojourn in Canaan. Now, in 1614, this is AD 1614, The History of the World was a book written by Sir Walter Raleigh. The History of the World, and it referenced the 1st century AD historian Philo of Alexandria in stating that Abraham, through astronomy, quote, "together with the motions of the stars and other heavenly bodies, found out the knowledge of the true God while he lived in Chaldea," end of quote. So Philo of Alexandria, as quoted by Sir Walter Raleigh, stating the fact that it was through astronomy, through his astronomical observations, that Abraham was able to come to the knowledge of the true God. Sir Walter Raleigh also references a number of historians that together agree that, quote, "Abraham, the holiest and wisest of men, did first teach the Chaldeans, then the Phoenicians, lastly the Egyptian priests, astronomy and divine knowledge." That's from his book, again, The History of the World. So not only was Abraham in the thick of this discovery, these observations in ancient Chaldea, ancient Babylonia, he was there teaching this instruction himself and proving the existence of God, as we read from Philo of Alexandria, proving the existence of God through those observations. So we see Abraham attributed by many as one of those chief instructors of the elite Chaldeans in their knowledge. Yet Abraham did not just study and teach science for science's sake. Through it, as we've said, he proved to himself the existence of the one true God. Now, how he did that, we will cover just after the break. Stay with us.
This is Watch Jerusalem on kpcg.fm.
The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. If you're just joining us, we are going through astronomy, mathematical genius, and the patriarch Abraham, and how these three subjects really are interconnected. If you've missed the first part of the program, be sure to go online, watchjerusalem.co.il, and listen to that recording again. It's really amazing, some of the archaeological discoveries and ancient texts that attest to the incredible knowledge and science and astronomy, mathematics that was being produced by the ancient Babylonians. Really knowledge that is only being rediscovered in our modern days. We often talk or hear talk about how humanity is progressing from a degenerate state. Oftentimes people will say that in today's world. But looking at this kind of knowledge, you can forget about that idea, because really these ancients knew more than many of our people in this more modern time, especially in the Middle Ages. And even with one of these artifacts here, that scientists have admitted that the Babylonians knew how to calculate these things better than we do today. So really, society in many respects is obviously regressing quite a lot. But humanity really did lose a lot of knowledge from these ancient times. A lot of that came as a result of book burnings, the burning of the library at Alexandria. A lot of this incredible knowledge, one of which we've touched on already, Hecataeus's book on Abraham. Josephus quoted it, an entire book on the exploits of Abraham from the 6th century BC, and that's no longer with us. Actually, there's only a couple of works from Hecataeus still with us to today. So it's really a curse, really, that a lot of this literature has disappeared from our libraries, from mankind, through these book burnings, through these disasters such as the Great Fire of Alexandria. And even you look to modern examples of the Nazis with their book burnings. Whenever book burning is involved like that, it's really a satanic thing, destroying knowledge like that. And so society these days has really just been rediscovering a lot of the knowledge that was known to the ancients. So we pick up our story here with Abraham again as one of the chief instructors of the Babylonians, the ancient Babylonians, in astronomy. And we've already gone through the various ancient historians that have recorded that. Yet Abraham did not just study and teach science for science's sake, as we have gone through. He proved with it the existence of the one true God. Josephus wrote about this, that Abraham was, quote, a person of great sagacity. He was the first that ventured to publish this notion that there was but one God, the creator of the universe. This, his opinion, was derived from the irregular phenomena that were visible both at land and sea, as well as those that happened to the sun and the moon and all the heavenly bodies thus. If, said he, these bodies had power of their own, they would certainly take care of their own regular motion. But since they do not preserve such regularity, they make it plain that, insofar as they cooperate to our advantage, they do it not of their own abilities, but as they are subservient to him who commands them, to whom alone we ought to justify to offer our honor and thanksgiving. End of quote. That's Josephus writing about Abraham. And to get the full context of this quote, you've got to realize in ancient Babylonia, people were worshipping the planets. They were worshipping the moons, the stars, the suns. And they were worshipping these various heavenly bodies, which their leaders were able to predict where they would be. They were able to predict eclipses. They were able to predict where these heavenly bodies would be at certain point in the future. And now Abraham looked at that and said, hey, if these are of themselves gods, we shouldn't be able to predict them like that. They should be subject to their own free will. So Abraham looked at that and started teaching the people through his astronomy observations that no, this is a sign of one God who created the heavens, who created the earth, and who created the laws that these heavenly bodies, these planets, these suns, moons, and stars all abide by. He created that, and the specific set of laws that govern what they do show that these individual planets aren't of themselves gods. We can predict where they'll end up. These aren't of themselves gods, and that's that caused a major point of contention between Abraham and his fellow Chaldeans. Josephus continues to record a big quarrel that came up between Abraham as a result of his teaching with the Chaldeans. And he states that, for which doctrines, when the Chaldeans and other people of Mesopotamia raised up a great tumult against him, he thought fit to leave that country. And at the command and by the assistance of God, he came and lived in the land of Canaan. So this is where the familiar biblical story of Abraham picks up in Genesis 12 with God's instruction that he emigrate to a new land. Now, many of our listeners may not know that that was in part in connection to astronomy, to Abraham's astronomy observations. Really interesting details there that Josephus and other historians go through. Now, it didn't just stop there with Abraham moving to Canaan. We know from the biblical account that he eventually moved into Egypt during a famine. And Josephus records there that while he was in Egypt, Abraham actually taught the Egyptians his knowledge of astronomy, of mathematics, the incredible Babylonian mathematical understanding and scientific knowledge that Abraham had helped teach. He brought that to the Egyptians. And you can read about that in his Antiquities of the Jews, Book 1, Chapter 8. Now, we see that Abraham had a massive impact on the education of the Egyptians. We don't have time to go through it, unfortunately, as Josephus records, in transferring to them this knowledge. So is it really any coincidence that after this time period, Egypt really began to rise on the scene as a truly powerful empire? Now, Abraham of the Bible is well known to us today as the righteous, faithful patriarch, father of the Israelite peoples through his son Isaac. Yet we see through several complementary historical records and accounts that he was a renowned astronomer and mathematician whose instruction was heavily impressed upon the ancient Chaldean and Egyptian worlds, and even Phoenician worlds, as the ancient histories record. And while, of course, his name hasn't yet been discovered in ancient Babylonian inscriptions, the scientific tablets that have been found and left behind do give a unique insight into Abraham's world and could actually even be the product of some of his own teaching. Now, to a limited extent, you could say today modern science has followed Abraham's wisdom in astronomy. We know that it's a ludicrous fallacy to worship the planets, the stars, and the moons with their perfectly predictable patterns and behaviors. These aren't gods, as the Babylonians believed them to be. These aren't individual deities. But it seems that we today have gone a step too far in now believing that there is no God. Abraham, the patriarch, used the cosmos to prove the existence of God. He used it to deny the existence of multiple deities, but he knew it was a proof of the existence of the one true God. Not only the fact that it exists in the first place, but that it follows specific patterns and laws which necessitate a great lawgiver. That's something that evolutionists don't really seem to cover, is where our laws, law of gravity, various laws of physics, where they actually come from. Had they been just randomly existing for eternity? Where did these laws come from? Abraham saw that, and by that saw a lawgiver, a creator of the physical realm, and a lawgiver of the physical laws. And the particular incredible aspects of the universe becoming more and more plain day by day in our multiple discoveries that are being made to this day show more and more evidently that this did not just happen. This creation, these physical heavenly bodies, this heavenly universe, these laws by which the universe operates, they did not just happen. This was the result of careful and deliberate creation. Now, for some amazing facts and figures about our universe, including proof of how and why it came to be, make sure you take a look at our free publication, Our Awesome Universe Potential. Now, if you're listening to this online, there'll be a link attached. Make sure you take advantage of that. You can download the magazine online. It's more of a magazine-sized booklet. For free, our free publication, Our Awesome Universe Potential, explaining why and how the universe came to be. So forget about how advanced as we are as a society today. Surely to believe that no God exists, that every particle, that every law and function in the universe is a product of accidental nothing, is in some ways more mindless than the antiquated beliefs of the Babylonians in multiple gods. It makes you wonder what Abraham would say to us. Undoubtedly, we'd probably end up driving him out too in our day and age. Now, in Psalm 8, we read David's observations of astronomy, of the heavens, and David stated, quote, "When I consider the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visitest him?" Now, that about wraps up the time that we have for the program today. There's a lot more that we could go into here, but make sure you check out watchjerusalem.co.il. There will be an article hopefully coming out soon on the subject, on astronomy, mathematical genius, and the patriarch Abraham. Again, if you've got any questions or comments for our program, feel free to contact us at letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. And do make sure you check out our publication, Our Awesome Universe Potential, a free publication that's available by a link on the website. You can find that there. So hope you've enjoyed today's program then, and thanks for listening.